Hello, I'm Tara, and we're talking about the basis behind different kinds of international business. Now, we have already seen different considerations: market orientation, cost orientation, efficiency orientation, politics orientation. All of these factors are the motivations behind international business. All of them have consequences, positive and negative. Let's see how different dynamics impact international business the world over. So we are going to learn about trade policies. We are going to learn about different theories. Now, international trade is not a 20th or a 21st century phenomena. International trade is something which has been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So we will actually see how different theories and bases have evolved over the centuries in different parts of the world. So even domestically, when we talk about India and the fact that we were a colony for so long and why we were invaded to begin with also has its foundations in trade rather than anything else when it comes to India being occupied and ruled. So, international business has evolved over centuries. International business motivations are different. Even now, there are theories in terms of why certain wars have happened in certain parts of the world, not because of politics, but because of commercial considerations, whether it is oil or whether it is, defense companies, and motivations can be so different. So, talking about different countries' motivations, how the dynamics work, while we love to bash China and while we want to, we have had a lot of situations where, for example, around festivals, there have been bans and restrictions on Chinese created products being supplied to those festivals and bans on anyone using those. And calls for boycotts of anyone using those. So we love to bash China when it comes to Chinese-made products, China eating, into our share of FDI or international investment, production, etc. Also, at the same time, we have to keep in mind that it is now one of our largest trading partners. So it has overtaken even the US. We cannot ignore China and we cannot ignore the learnings that come in from China because we need them from a market point of view, we need them from a partnership point of view, and also we can learn from them in terms of for the same kind of investment, how their infrastructure and various other aspects of their economy have grown and opened up versus us, which is why very often. In the past, countries have chosen to deploy more funds and take higher FDI to that region rather than as much to us. Now, of course, we are world over being familiar with something called the China Plus One strategy, which is that while China ends up being one of the larger trading partners for practically any country in the world, at the same time, a lot of countries are realizing that because of overdependence on China as a trading partner, they can be severely impacted if a situation emergency happens or an international situation like COVID happens. So they are becoming aware of the fact that they probably need to have another higher priority nation to be a trading partner. Contributing in a large way versus only China, which is the China Plus One strategy. So whether it is COVID when China got shut out and a lot of the transactions and trade with China got impacted, or whether it is in the past we had the tsunami, we have had other issues where excessive dependency on China and the region thereabouts has adversely affected international economies. So while there is a lot of learning to come from China, we have to also, as a country, be aware that if countries will want to move to a China plus one strategy, then India, being a country with the largest population in the world, we've overtaken China. India, being a country which can provide low-cost labor, we have the benefit of providing low-cost labor. We have the benefit of demographics in terms of a large working age able population. We have the benefits in terms of providing the consumer as well, in terms of the new middle class and smaller towns where demand for an improved quality of life is constantly increasing. Then we should try to vie for that plus one partnership with as many countries in the world as possible. So the motivations for countries to do business with us should be strengthened, especially in a scenario where they are looking to reduce dependency on China. So we have various reasons why trade happens internationally. Even when it comes to our daily life, even when we are eating a McDonald's, we may be having it near Andheri station and not think twice about that McChicken that we had. But the fact is that that is international trade that we are participating in. Now, while McDonald's may have today some 42,000 restaurants, the world over, also keep in mind that that international trade, as in when McDonald's moved into India, which was in about 96, the year 95, 96, a few years post-liberalization, it wasn't simply a matter of, okay, licensing has become easier, franchising has become easier, let's move into a new country, we're getting a new market. There are a lot of other policies which would have been taken into account, cultural, regulatory, etc. For example, just think about India and the stigma that we have with certain kinds of oils, stigma that we have with certain kinds of fats used in cooking, where there were a lot of protests in terms of allegations that certain kinds of fats which are not considered sacred in India may be getting used in the cooking of certain outlets. Now, this is in the past has happened, and can you imagine the amount of investment that McDonald's would have had to do, and not just investment, the policy, the branding, the streamlining to make sure that they are conducting business in India in a way that suits the cultural requirements of this country and the religious requirements of this country. So while in the US, if you go and say makalu tikki, everyone's going to be thinking, what are you talking about? But in India, those products have come in. McDonald's, the world over, is known so much for the consistency of its products. But in India, that consistency cannot go too far because of issues we have with certain kinds of burgers which can be offered, certain kinds of oils which can be used, and also the palate, and requirements of our consumers locally. So trade policies, while dealing with commerce, while dealing with money, bottom line, etc., have to go down to that level in terms of understanding local requirements, which will either make them a success or not when it comes to a country. So for example, Starbucks wasn't very successful in Australia. Now, we are familiar with Starbucks in practically every second lane of India and the world over. But when it came to Australia, they weren't successful because in Australia, people found Starbucks coffee very sweet, overly sweet. Now, that should have been delved into in the past. The sweetness, the priciness, etc., all of that should have been addressed. So when we are talking international business, there are the macro aspects, government policies, currencies, economies, labor, cost, etc. But there are also these cultural aspects going down to the end consumer, which have to be taken into account both from the consumption point of view, and also if you're going to use those countries as manufacturing hubs, then you have to also keep those policies in mind. We have seen imbalances which are there in trade. I was mentioning the Russian economy with a population of 145 million people, and their situation obviously has been heavily impacted by wars. In fact, in terms of some of the changes that they are proposing, for example, because they've been like cut off from the whole world and they need money and they need tourism. One of the things they want to actually, bring in is tourism revenue. And in the interest of this, in the of promoting this tourism, they are actually proposing to ease visa norms for Indians, because much of Europe and much of US is actually shunning them and boycotting them. So many aspects come into play when it comes to international trade, that here tourism, from a tourism point of view, they are trying to make it easier for Indians who look to travel and who are looking to where also in the recent years we are seeing Schengen visas getting tougher, where Russia may become a good tourist destination, bringing in much required revenue for them. So there are different kinds of international business policies: free trade, fair trade, inward looking, outward looking. Now we've all heard of North Korea, of course, one of the most inward looking closed countries in the world. Now they would be they are such an isolated island that theirs would be some of the most restricted policies, and quite frankly, very, very limited business with a few partners, if at all. Free trade policies largely involve governments not restricting imports, exports. For example, the NAFTA, EU, NAFTA, as I was telling you, is for free trade between North America and Canada, European Union, which has the from which Britain exited in 2016 with the Brexit. But within those regions, free and minimal, or if at all, any restrictions or sensitive lists. Now, India post 1991, the reforms eased up and freed up a lot of the restrictions that we had prior to that. Currency was made partially convertible. FDI was allowed. A lot of the restrictions went out, and which is why we see the economy as it is today. Now, also keep in mind that when it comes to free trade policies, there are certain regions like the ASEAN, which is Association of Southeast Asian Nations, which is 10 countries, Singapore, Brunei, Cambodia, etc., where within this region there is complete ease of doing business. There are about 650 million people dependent on, in this region, a population of 650 million people in this region who are dependent on this free trade during the, in this region. The deep combined GDP of this region is about $2.9 trillion, and this is all very beneficial to the local population. Talking about ASEAN, we have the Tiger Economies, which is five countries. You have your Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, South Korea, which saw phenomenal growth within a few decades, and a large part of that was free trade among these nations. So likewise, now you have a new phenomena, which is the Tiger Cub economies, like Vietnam, like Thailand, etc., who are trying to replicate what happened in the Tiger economies in those few decades, which led to a huge upside in the living standards of those countries in terms of the poverty alleviation in those countries. And a large contributor to that was the free trade permitted across those regions. So free trade has a lot of beneficial aspects for the populations at large in those countries, both from the import and export point of view. Now, just because a country is, we are liberalized, doesn't mean we have no restrictions at all or no tariffs at all. Of course, we have tariffs from time to time. We have sensitive list, restricted list, whether it is defense or lotteries, you know, where we do not allow international investment or chit funds. Of course, from time to time, for various reasons, we have tariffs or we have import duties. For example, there were import and export duties. For example, there was a ban on export of brief while there was a ban on export of non-basmati you know, rice. There was a ban on exports of various other forms of, you know, food items. As I was mentioning in an earlier chapter, in terms of the custom duties on exports of onions, that was hiked to almost 40%, has been reduced now, but is still there. So just because we as a country have become easier to do business with, doesn't mean that as a country, we will not have any, you know, tariffs from time to time, any restrictions from time to time. Of course, they will be there. For example, I mean, at the other extreme, you have a Trump, Donald Trump, who in the past has threatened to like have 100% ban or 100% tariff on countries, you know, if they do not adhere to certain requirements that he wants from them. For example, he wants the US dollar to be the reserve currency globally, and he doesn't want countries to move away to other currencies. And he has threatened to impose, you know, 100% restriction or ban on those countries if they think about moving to another reserve currency. So just because a country has free trade policies, whether it's North America, whether it's India, whether it's, you know, any European nation or an ASEAN nation, doesn't mean that from time to time there will not be restrictions or tariffs imposed on imports and exports for various reasons. But of course, these can be dynamic. They come and go. They are not, you know, permanent and etched in stone once they are imposed. Inward looking, when I was talking about, then obviously a country like North Korea is completely inward looking. Even countries like Cuba, where there are so many embargoes from the US and so many parts of the world, that practically, even though they would want to be outward looking, practically they end up becoming inward looking. They had a very vibrant export economy when it came to sugar. They had a very vibrant export economy when it came to rum, which is again a byproduct of you know, sugar production. And their internal inflation and the embargoes on them from the US and other parts of the world have completely isolated, you know, their economy, where it's almost on a war footing, where crazy, like the official inflation is supposed to be about 30%. That is official. Informally, it's probably far higher. So while as a country, they are not a North Korea in terms of inward looking and having barriers and trade barriers and all of that, but at the same time, because of the practical aspects, they have become there, at least on the export side, they have become completely inefficient, and they have become very, very, very dependent on, you know, external imports, which was unthinkable for them, especially when it came to industries like sugar. Now, I told you about ASEAN, which is, you know, the increased standard in living at a trajectory which was very, very steep over a few decades, completely took the tiger economies to another level. The tiger cub economies are trying to achieve that now. When it comes to the ASEAN nation, the 650 roughly, you know, population in that country makes ASEAN, you know, the fourth largest trading partner when it comes to the US. So you see how the growth has been in that region. When it comes to India, we have introduced the foreign trade policy in 2015. There are various trade promotion councils which have been set up. Our exports have been moving up. We had, as I was mentioning in the past, our exports were almost $777 billion. And we want to keep increasing our share in the world exports, which currently is not a very high share in the world exports. As far as our trading partners are concerned, the top few, number one has become China very recently, having overtaken the US. Then of course you have US, you have UAE. Now, thanks to the petroleum imports that we are getting from Russia, in a scenario where other countries are not trading with Russia in the post-war scenario, Russia has actually become one of our top five trading partners. So other than the US, China, we have UAE, we have Russia, we have Saudi Arabia, who have become, who are among our top five trading partners when it comes to India. The policies that India has are providing a lot of support. We have an agenda to reach $5 trillion economy by the end of, not 2025 anymore, but by the end of 2030. And we need to be on a very high trajectory for that. So a lot of push is being given, a lot of SOPs are being given, a lot of initiatives are being taken in various forms by the Commerce Ministry. As I was saying, it is not simply a matter of adding new products to our export list, whether it is engineering goods, whether it is alcoholic beverages, whether it is other value-add products, but also identifying newer markets, like Lithuania, Switzerland. I'll be talking in a lot more detail. We have a free trade FTA which is being signed by with Switzerland after years of discussion, and that's going to ease our business and bring in a lot of investment from four members from Europe, which includes Norway, which includes Iceland, Switzerland, who will be bringing in a lot of investment into the country in return for signing the FTA, which is going to create ease of doing business as far as Swiss products and those European products vis-a-vis India is concerned. So keep in mind, India is a very large economy. We have a very large population. Everyone wants to do business with India, because where else will you get such a large captive market for your products and services? And also, where will you get such a large working population to provide efficient and low-cost labor? But that doesn't mean anyone and everyone can enter. So the Commerce Ministry and the government are ensuring that we make the most of this demographic advantage that we have by creating positive policies. As I have mentioned in the past, we saw trade fall during the pandemic years. But this gives you an idea in terms of the trade when it comes to global trade for goods and services. As you can see, the downside which happened during the pandemic years has been more than made up. And the blue line here shows you the goods trade, and the red shows you the commercial services. And we have seen a healthy upside. And also another thing here to keep in mind is that going forward, the e-commerce aspect of international trade is going to contribute more and more to international trade. So even when we were talking about, say, just the Asia region or the ASEAN economies, when it comes to the e-commerce, the digital economies and the digital trade, that is going to become a very, very, very large part of international trade, in which India also is going to be a very major contributor. This gives you contributions from, China, US, Germany when it comes to the trade. Now, the blue line right on top is China. And then as you can see, Germany has seen a marginal, downside over the last few years. So gives you an idea in terms of the share of different countries in global trade for the top few countries. Now, when it comes to goods, trades, manufactured goods, and other goods, again, this is gives you an idea over the years how the composition has moved and what is it that the you know, when it comes to the global trade, what are the elements which are contributing and what are the ones which are showing up in the trends. So for example here, the manufactured goods share decreased to 63% in 2022 from 68%. So this has again, during pandemic years, goods demands were higher, but post-pandemic years, we know other elements have come into play, like wars, both in the Middle Eastern region, in the you know, Russia-Ukraine region, and all of these aspects have heavily contributed to petroleum and energy price rises. Freight rates have gone through the roof because of the international channels being being challenged by you know, your Houthi rebels and various other elements. So energy prices and the cost of production has gone up so much that you know, that has obviously impacted manufacturing the world over, and then also the share of manufacturing goods in your global trade. This gives you an idea between the volume and the value index of you know, trade. Gives you an idea in terms of if you see the blue line, that's the value. If you see the green line, that's the volume. Is giving you an idea in terms of how resilient the global demand is for imported products, given everything that is happening on the supply side, whether it is you know, cost, whether it is energy prices, whether it is freight prices, whether it is various other elements which have been very, very dynamic and chaotic in the last few years. Various elements you know, affect international trade. We have spoken about labor, we have spoken about newer markets, we have spoken about you know, competition, we have spoken about efficiency, all of those things, supply chains, etc. Also, you know, some elements that we're going to be focusing on a lot more in other chapters is your borrowing costs and interest rates, etc. And a lot of the international players like IMF, you know, your World Bank, they are going to come into play when it comes to supporting countries with borrowings and with lendings, either at zero cost to the very poor nations or at you know, minimal cost to various nations. Now, all of these elements influence our global trade. Interestingly, India as is the largest borrower from the World Bank, but our large borrowing is decades old, because these are long-term loans which don't have to be repaid. The repayment doesn't start for several years, and it is also over a very long period of time that the repayment has to happen. And keep in mind that our economy immediately post-liberalization to now has changed so much. So a large part of the borrowing that we actually have, which is making us the largest borrower, is because of borrowings which happened very long ago. And hence, the incremental increase in our debt burden is not actually that much, because we have, as an economy, we have improved, and also in terms of access to better commercial, you know, capital markets globally, our access to capital markets globally has improved over the years. So we don't have to be dependent on loans only and interest costs only from the World Bank, etc. We can go to more attractive avenues elsewhere as well, because our economy has improved a lot. So all of these elements come into play when in global trade is being conducted. These are some of the terminologies for some of the freight rates, etc., internationally, which are used, the Shanghai containerized freight rate. Repeatedly, we're talking about freight rates. We are talking about containers, etc., because a large part of the trading is happening in international waters. And, you won't see that much of it through airfare, but so much of it through international waters, and which is why there is so much news reporting on what is going on in the Red Sea, what is happening when it comes to freight rates, when it comes to insurance, when it comes to various other elements. The Baltic Dry Index is another term for, serves as a index for standard cost of shipping internationally for global trade. As with any other kind of business, there are challenges to international business. Some of the challenges could be tariffs. For example, tariffs, I was telling you that we had import restrictions, export restrictions. There was a restriction on export of broken rice, restriction on export of, or rather tariffs based on export of onions, various other products. So a lot of these challenges come into play when it comes to international trade. Now, sometimes these could be on based on the value of the product, the value, how much are you exporting or importing, and sometimes it is on the specific product. For example, if you're traveling out of the country or into the country, you see, forget international business and corporates, think of it at an individual level. Your bags are scanned when you are leaving the country, and especially when you are re-entering the country, because there are limit restrictions, or there are maximum permissible limits, whether it comes to electronics, whether it comes to alcohol, whether it comes to so many of these things. And if you are seen to be exceeding those, then of course you would be penalized at customs, or you may or may not be allowed to bring in some of those items. Likewise, when you land in countries like the US and a lot of the European countries, they are very, very particular, in addition to various other things, but they are very particular about food items being raw food items especially being taken into their country. And that is something that they, more than anything else, they ask you about. And they are very particular about those. And both from a point of view of, their domestic production, but also there, especially when it comes to, raw vegetables, etc., various food items, there is a lot of paranoia in terms of the insects it could be bringing into the country, or in terms of the vegetation, diseases, if at all, they could be bringing into the country, and those are heavily restricted. So tariffs could be both monetary, or there could be restrictions. Now forget international trade. Even if you travel between Goa and other parts of the country, in Goa, alcohol is cheaper because of the duty structure, excise structure, etc. there. But that doesn't mean you can go to Goa, stack lots of alcohol, cheaper alcohol into your vehicle or into your suitcase and bring it into other states. You have a quota in terms of the maximum two bottles or whatever that you are allowed to take to other states. So likewise, it is not just a monetary thing in terms of a duty. It could also be maximum caps in terms of number of items, whether it's alcohol, whether it's phones, whether it's, so many other items. So these are the various, restrictions which could be there. Now, likewise, on the other side is subsidies to promote domestic production, to promote, domestic industry and products, to make them attractive. Subsidies may be permissible there, to make them more attractive versus your international products. Quotas, as I was mentioning, is your limits, two bottles of alcohol, phones, etc. Of course there would be quotas there, laptops, etc. There would be quotas. So electronics, various other items, gold, so many times you hear in the news that this was, so much amount of gold was caught at the customs, hidden in footwear, hidden here, there, etc. So there are quotas and limits which you cannot exceed, and across the banner as far as products in are concerned. Now here, subsidies is of course something which is a to promote, so which gives a push, which makes your domestic products more competitive versus international products. So this is something which is a you know, which could be in the form of interest, low interest loans, grants in cash. You have export promotion zones. We have SEZs. You know, so you have your export promotion zones, certain areas which are promoted, where if you put up your facilities, manufacturing facilities, factories, etc., you would get certain SOPs and benefits from the government. So these are to support and help your domestic production and products versus your international products. So for example, when I was talking earlier about you know, products during festivals, to counter cheaper and maybe more trinkety, attractive looking products coming in from China, you know, a local push could make the domestic products more attractive and more cost effective to the local consumer. Now, there are various kinds of other embargoes which are there. Now, for example, when I was talking about Cuba, a lot of the embargoes there are not that it is not, you know, it is tariff. Those embargoes are there because of political reasons. So those embargoes lead to a huge restriction on these economies, and has created a situation of isolation and very, very, very high inflation. Now in India, for example, you have a complete embargo on any product of beef. Okay, we are very aware of that. So that is not connected to a cost impact, a competition impact, a revenue impact. That is a cultural, religious, you know, policy, and that is something which is not, there is pretty much no flexibility as far as any entity or country is concerned, and that has to be respected and adhered to.